I'm Elvira Call. I'm from Wheatland, Wyoming, presently, but I grew up in Guernsey, Wyoming, and went to school there and graduated from Guernsey High School. I met my husband, William H. Call, who lived in Dwyer, but they brought those kids into Guernsey, and he graduated from Guernsey also. Then we were married, and as a city girl, I was thrust out on the farm, and I didn't know anything about, you know, what the implements were called. A plow was a plow, no matter what you did. And I was strongly told, no, 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 we are rod weeding. We're not plowing. So it was a lesson for me to learn. And then when harvest came along, I thought that was probably pretty neat. But it's a lot of work, and it's hot, and it's sweaty. And when I had to help do the truck, then I didn't ever do it right, you know. And he liked for me to drive the truck so as he could keep on going. And that was especially with an old truck that didn't run very well. So I wasn't a very good farm hand. But
did you ever get the hang of it eventually after?
Not very much. But we had three kids, and my oldest was a boy, Grant. So he got the job, and he also got the job of summer fowling. I was thinking the other day, he was supposed to be finishing up a field of the summer fowling, and he didn't come, and he didn't come. And so Bill went out to find out what was his problem, and the tractor was stopped. So he kind of was scared, and he went over there. Well, not too far from there is a dam. And there he was, down there throwing rocks at the polywogs. Didn't finish that field that morning. And so he got into trouble, too, then, because that should have been done by noon, he said. But in throwing rocks at the pond and at the frogs, he did pick up a very nice white arrowhead. So it was kind of a nice thing that happened after that. Bill's parents were still on the farm when we got out there, so we were living, after we were married, we were living, and we had the three kids in this little, it was might have been a 16 by 12 building that they built for us, his dad and his uncle built for us. So we had three rooms, a little bedroom and a front room and a tiny, tiny kitchen. And, of course, on the farm at that, we didn't have any, they didn't hook us up to their water system, so I had to carry water in a bucket, although we did have electricity, and they did, and they had the, you know, the sink and the bathtub and things like that. For 7 years, I carried a bucket of water, so we have water to do, and I learned that how you can bathe the three kids in the same little wash pan. And well, finally, then we just kind of outgrew that little thing with when my third child was born. So when she got to be 3 years old, then my folks who lived in Guernsey, they said, you know what, they're selling some of the buildings at Fort Warren, and let's go down and see what they are. So we went down there, and there was one. They had taken the top part of the barracks and cut it in half and then made it into a 30 by 40 house, which was three bedrooms, one bath, a nice big kitchen, and a front room to match. So they were ready to sell that model home. The rest of them were you just buy the barrack and you do it yourself. But they were ready to sell that one that they had. And they had sheetrocked it, so it was ready to tape and paste. And they said they would deliver it to us. Well, to deliver it to Dwyer, or where we were, which was on 87, 3 miles west of Dwyer, they couldn't get out under some of the underpasses that were over the road. So they had to go to the west, clear to Antelope Gap area, in through to Guernsey, and come back on Highway 26, bringing this house. I don't think they thought they had to go so far when they offered to deliver it to us. But they did, and we put it down there, and then we had to tape and mud it and paint it, and it put floor covering down. And it made a nice home for us for 40 years, except water was a problem. Mm. We live on, or this place his grandparents homesteaded on, was right on the Hartville uplift, I think. And it was a long ways to get water. We drilled four different wells around there. One of them might have been all right, but the driller lost his drill bit in it. And so then they moved to another place. And we got that one going. And it wasn't going to be too bad, we didn't think. But all of a sudden it quit. So we had to dig. We dug a big cistern, and I hauled water in a big old, I don't know how big of a tank that somebody put on a truck for us. And so every week you would go down to the neighbors and get this tank filled, put it in the cistern. That could last us then for the rest of the week. Finally, we got a well, and it really didn't do the best, but it did provide water if we were really careful for the house then. And that's what we did. But we just celebrated today the centennial from 1912 to 2012, the centennial homestead farm and ranch program that they had today. So Bill's grandparents, William Albert Call and his wife Kate, came to that area, homesteaded with 320 acres in 1912. Will was born, he was known as Will. He was born in Marion County, Kansas in 1873, and then he married Kate Brake who lived in Marion County, Kansas in 1893. She was born in 1874 in Ontario, Canada, and she was a member of, her dad was a Mennonite preacher, and they came to the Kansas area, I think, probably with some of the other Mennonites that came in that area and bringing their hard red winter wheat. I think maybe, this is my own thought, maybe Will didn't get along with his dad. I don't know. But after they got married, we went to different places to work for different farmers. And his dad then was also a William H. Call, and he died 1904, I think it was. And in his will then, he had the two children, Will and his sister Cora. But in his will, he gave $1 to Cora, because that's, I don't know if he was mad at her or that's all he wanted. And he gave half of his farm to Will, but there was no address known. And yet he was just down in the lower part of Kansas working with them. So I just kind of thought there was a problem there. This William H. Call was born in New York, went to Ohio, and he joined service there with Civil War, and it was 1862, was it, or something. But he had asthma so bad that I think that whole year he spent in the hospitals or in treatment, and so they let him out honorably, but he married his wife, and they came, I don't know just what they did in the 6 years after he left the Civil War, but it took him 6 years and came back down into Kansas. I have a notion he might have got to be able to have a homestead of 80 acres there in Kansas, and that's where Will was born. But he didn't stay there to take over that farm. Bill's maternal grandfather came to Dwyer to homestead, but he had a steam engine that he would go around combining wheat or whatever they do with that. Not combining, because it didn't have a combine. It was to cut it, and everybody stacked it, and then you run it through the header or the letter or something. So he would tell different young men that, you know, there's free land in Wyoming if you want to go homestead. You know, now's the time to do it. And so that's why I think Will and Kate came to Dwyer area. And they had three sons, Leonard, who was 18, and Earl Hicks, who was 17, and Ori was 16. And they filed on a Section 4 and a Section 9 in that area, containing the 320 acres, because on dry land you could have that 320 acres. They built a small log house and a small barn and a chicken house. Then they hauled water from 3 miles away, which was at the Rutherford place, which was Bill's other grandparents, probably for several years, because their son, Ori, was drafted into World War I in 1918. And I have some of his letters, and he wrote home one day, and he said, "Have you drilled a well yet?" And then he says, "I suppose if it keeps on raining, you won't need to, because all the ponds will be full." And I thought, well, of course the cows can eat out of there, but or drink out of there, but what about the guys, people, in the mother in the house? She still has to haul water for her years of working and stuff. And so I don't know when they finally did, but it was a long time. The water that they did get had quicksand in it, so they had to case it. It was 400 feet deep, but they made that, and that well still probably would do now if you had a cistern to put the water into. They raised wheat and barley and spelts, and they raised hogs, and they had some cows. And then, of course, they had two or three milk cows to have the cream that they sold and the eggs from the chickens. But in 1918, Ori did leave for World War I. In June of 1918. By the end of in September, he was sent to France, and sometime probably the 29th, 30th, maybe the 1st of October, he didn't return from into the Aragon forest. So he was reported missing and later was pronounced dead. So that was a big blow to him with all what they had. Now, Leonard and Earl, they got married and they was able to homestead a little area. One was, you know, away from home. So in May of 1917, Will filed to make his notice of intention to make his final three-year proof on their claims. And in July of 1917, it shows he made payment in full for the 320 acres. And I have that, too, a patent that was signed by President Woodrow Wilson, which gave and granted the 320 acres to Will and Kate Call. Then Will purchased 400 acres, which was just near them. That was from a friend, family, neighbor that they were wanting to sell. And that was in 1930. He borrowed $650 for those 400 acres. And that increased the land to 720 acres. But in 1932, then Will passed away. Then in 1935, Kate passed away. And then Earl Hicks, he had already moved to Kansas. He decided that farming in a depression was not the thing to do. He took his family and they moved back to Kansas to live. So Leonard then made it go through the depression. He worked out. He went to the railroad. I don't know wherever he worked, wherever he could. And finally, in 1938, a final certificate was given, and the lender had been paid. And so Leonard did a lot, and his wife, Murdy. And so then Leonard and Murdy had three sons. You know, my husband, Bill. Bill was 14 when Earl Robert was born, and he was 16 when his little brother, David, was born. Then he and I were married, and had in our little house there next to them. Then Murdy, real suddenly, in 1960, when she was about 52 years old, died very suddenly. So Leonard then was, by that time, he was 67 years old. He was quite a bit older than his wife, and he retired to look after his young sons. So he sold half of his, it was still in a Will Call estate, and he sold. So we bought his half, and then Earl Hicks let us buy his half so that we had the 700 acres. And then we were able to buy in 801 acres in 1963 from the neighbors Ed and Mary Clark. So that gave us a little more wheat ground to work. And it was probably better wheat ground than what the home place was. But it all was right next door. Then in 1972, we could buy 1,000 acres of just grassland hooked on west of us. So that made us a total of 2,500 acres or a little more. And so we thought we were pretty good. But all this time, in trying to make ends meet, Bill would go to the Sunrise and work in the winter months, and he worked down underneath. Then he could quit, and we could do the summer work on the farm. And then when he got that wheat all done in September, he could go back and get on to the Sunrise mine again. Well, after about 3 or 4 years, Sunrise, CF&I, would not allow that anymore. So it was in 1960, the miners went on a strike, and they were out on a strike for about 2 years. So that's when we said, well, we're going to have to make, are you going to be a miner or are you going to be a farmer? And Bill says, well, I'd rather farm. So I said, okay, don't go back to the mine. You know, that's what we will do. So he didn't work there anymore. Then our son was killed, so that really left us lost, and Bill really grieved there. And so then he went to work when they were building the power plant in Wheatland, the coal-fired Basin Electric, and he got to work on one of the contractors there for a while. But then they had an accident. He had a very bad concussion that left him basically crippled then from then on. So then his younger brother, Earl, stepped in, and he was wanting to farm, so he rented the place, and he kept the place going, had cows, and had his cows on there and did the wheat. Then when the CRP come about, Bill said, you know, Earl, he said, we can't afford the tractors and the fuel. He said, I think that's the thing to do. And Earl wasn't really in favor of it, but he wasn't the boss, and so that's what we did, and he just grazed it all. But now Earl is ready to retire, and so we're just kind of holding on to the place. my grandson says, Grandma, don't sell that place. But, of course, he's making better money working at a job, too. So then what would that be? So anyhow, that's the 100 years of the Call family. And we live in Wheatland now because it's easier. I have a daughter that lives there in Wheatland. And my other daughter then has lived in Arizona, and she's a school teacher. And this last winter, she went to Alaska then to thought she could get better money, which was a good experience for her. And she decided that living was a little expensive up there, too. And it's getting harder then for bills. So she came home this summer, and she got a job there in Platte County teaching. So I'll have both the girls there now. I had 5 grandkids. My oldest grandson died a year ago with very fast-growing cancer that just broke my heart. But I have 4 other grandkids. They're doing so well. In fact, today, on August the 18th, my other granddaughter, she graduated in May with a doctor of optometry. Today, she couldn't come to the state fair because she was taking her Wyoming license, and I just heard that she passed it, so she's ready to go to work now. She does have a business that she can purchase, and so it looks up today. My other granddaughter has graduated with her BA from the University of Wyoming, and now she's a graduate student, and she'll have one more year this next year. And so if she doesn't become a professional student, she's doing really well. And my grandson then, he's in Casper working for an oil company. He's a draftsman for them. And my other granddaughter still lives in Arizona, and she's working down there and enjoys being in Arizona. So anyhow, I think it's been hard to be on the farm. But it's still, we have the best view of the Laramie Peak from the house that we lived there. There's a book out called The Second Man, I think, by, what is her name, from up to Lusk, May Urbanik, yeah, written, it's a novel. And she writes of the prehistoric people that every morning when they got up, they did homage to the Lala Lama, which is the Laramie Peak. And every evening before they retired for bed, they did another homage to the Lala Lama. And I said, that's my husband. He would look out before he climbed into bed. Is it going to blow or storm tomorrow? Mm-hmm. He could tell by the clouds over Laramie Peak. And every morning he'd get up and he'd look there to see what the weather today was going to be. So,
well, thank you for taking the time to share your story.
Thank you.